I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. I will be very careful about slinging stuff. Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson. We're live here on YouTube, July 31st, last day of July, Sam. We're going to go through all the recent training camp news, the injuries. We know there's always stuff happening here.
A lot of stuff happening. People getting hurt. It sucks.
Yeah, I don't like it at all.
Really early in camp.
Yeah.
Like immediately, guys are dropping like flies.
The Lex injuries, lower extremities, yeah. Happening a lot. Here recently. We'll break down some of that. So we got Jalen Ramsey, Joe Burrow. We got Aaron Rodgers clapping back on Sean Payton.
Again, Sean Payton.
Yeah. Good stuff. And Danielle Hunter signs with the we're extended with the Minnesota Vikings. So all sorts of stuff to discuss here.
Jonathan Taylor and Jim Irsay.
What a weird we talk about their riff. I mean, we broke down in depth. I venture to say no other PFF NFL or NFL podcast. Sorry. Certainly no other PFF NFL podcast, broke down Kyler Murray and his like social media strategy last year. We broke that down in depth. What happens when he unfollows the Cardinals on Instagram? What's happening in the front office with the Cardinals?
Right.
We're going to break down what's happening when Jonathan Taylor and Jim Irsay are taking it to social media to go back and forth here. We're going to break it all down.
Having had a big meeting in the bus. It's almost hard to believe that didn't fix everything.
They met in the bus, too?
Yeah, Jim, like, drove the bus up to the side of the practice facility, and Jonathan Taylor had, like, an hour-long meeting in there with him.
That didn't work, huh?
No. Apparently, very quickly after that.
Jonathan, what we're going to do is come up with some off-season injury that you didn't have, apparently.
Yeah, that's only making it worse.
All right, so where do we want to start here? Let's do the clickbait Aaron Rodgers stuff.
Okay, yeah. It's all clickbait.
It's all clickbait.
That's the beauty of this.
It's July.
Yeah.
Still July. Tomorrow, it's August. We change everything.
I watched some of the, what do they call it, Bank Together Weekend thing, where they did like a mini, almost like a, 7 hours of commercial-free football, but like for training camps. It was kind of interesting. They, you know, bombed around every training camp thing.
NFL Network?
Yeah, yeah.
They did?
Yeah.
They can do that again?
I don't know.
I'll do it. I'm in between providers right now.
Oh.
Yeah. DirecTV on and off customer since 2003.
Right.
And I will soon.
Is this like a broadcast version of when you phone them up and say, I'm thinking of moving to Virgin Media or whatever? And they go, oh, we can offer you a limited time cheaper deal. Are you doing this on the broadcast to try and DirecTV is going to pick up the phone?
Oh, no. I've already canceled DirecTV.
Oh, okay.
Now, we're going to banter for a little bit. It's okay. I think a lot of veterans of Sunday Ticket know. There was a strategy for years. You could find it on the old message boards, now turned into like the Reddit threads or whatever. When you called the cancellation line.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
On DirecTV, you called the cancellation line like, man, I'm out of here. They're like, do you want Sunday? Take Sunday Ticket.
Right.
That's all I wanted. Thank
you. Can I say how much I hate that? What? I hate having to do that. I hate having to call these people up and get the cheaper thing that they could just give me in the first place. Like we have to phone around, like every time your insurance is up, right? And I have to go phoning 7 people and then go back and say, hey, I just got this deal, match it. And they're like, oh, okay, just give me the cheap money. Like stop making me do this legwork to go find it and then get it cheaper in the first place. Just give me the cheap deal.
Ends the negotiation, huh?
Yes.
Just get right to it.
I hate that dance that you have to do.
So anyway, I don't know if there's a trick with YouTube. I am trying to figure out, are there other streaming services besides YouTube TV, though? If I just got Sunday Ticket through YouTube TV, I'll tell you what my fear is, though, because I have a routine on Sundays. My routine, as you know, is the 8-box mix.
Yeah.
For DirecTV. I believe YouTube allows 4.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to go
but
2 TVs, yeah. 2 4s. I do know you've got unlimited Sunday Ticket streams.
Right.
So I have my computer there. So once there, the problem is like week 2, there's 10 games at 1. Most weeks you're at the 7 to 9 range. But once you're above 8, you know, it's tricky.
But forcing you to the second TV in terms of picture real estate is actually great.
It'll be a win.
Because now instead of eight games and one TV with the bar at the bottom, so you're not even seeing a third of the screen, now you've got four and four.
And YouTube does
some serious size.
YouTube does better with the four box real estate.
Now we've got like some serious size for each screen. You can actually see what's going on.
I already had a second TV in the mix, but that would either be on a singular game or on Red Zone. So I'm looking forward to seeing the setup. You know, I don't really have a preseason to practice it. So week one, it's just going to be we're just going.
We need to get that guy that shows us his draft setup every year. We need to get him in. Say, here's what we're working with.
Yeah, we could get Chris probably to fly him in. And set up our home office systems.
You got YouTube TV.
Yeah.
The end. Make magic happen.
Make it work.
Just go nuts. And look, if you need to buy four more TVs. Just
throw it on the PFF card.
Right.
Just throw it right on the card.
You won't have a problem.
That's what we That's what we should be doing. So, you know, let me know. I mean, if YouTube TV, we're looking to partner with you, YouTube. Just throwing that out there. We're influencers in the NFL space.
Yeah.
And you happen to have Sunday Ticket. So let's go. Let's chat.
Okay. We'll
push some people your way with Sunday Ticket.
Sure.
We have some sway here.
You know, I laugh when you say things like that on the basis of, like, how would anybody, you know, what a ridiculous thing that any of those people are listening to us. Did you see we showed up on that Lions video at the start? You know, that classic.
We.
It's our show.
It was you.
I mean, my voice was there, but it was our show. Yeah. Taken from our show.
That could have been on any show.
Right.
You could have been on any show.
Having said that, I remember specifically making those statements. So
on our show.
That classic thing that these videos do where they're like, here's all what the media said and here's us clapping back, you know? We were the what the media said by
influencers.
And I noticed, by the way, that they cut it off right before I said the good thing. Because it was a cadence to that speech. I was saying, look, they reached in the first round, bad. They reached for a position of low value, bad. But they got a good football player.
We like all the football players.
They cut it off right before that part. They were just giving it the bad part. So I'm not accusing the Detroit Lions, who we may or may not be visiting in training camp sometime soon. I'm not accusing them of taking my words out of context and using it to power their very good video on the draft on their YouTube channel. I'm just saying that was cut off before I gave them praise.
Let me assure you that the media would never chop up interviews, words, or sound bites in order to make a point that furthers the point that they want to make.
No, least of all us.
They would never, ever do that. No one does that at all.
No.
That is a rare thing. Very rare.
Mm.
Yeah, we'll be there in a few weeks. Hopefully we'll have Dan Campbell on the show. We'll talk to him about it. I'll let you answer for yourself. Why did you say this was all bad and then not give any positives?
No, I think we should go on the offensive and ask Dan Campbell why he cut off the comments at the
the
critical moment.
Yeah. Do you think Dan, we're really getting off the rails
Dan,
here.
Why did you take our comments out of context?
Remember our friend Rick Spielman as GM.
Yeah, everything goes through him.
He was like, I watch all of our internet social media videos.
Yep.
Do you think Dan, you know, takes an interest?
Well, I don't think it matters if he does or he doesn't. The point is, he's in that position. So we can take it to him and we can act as if the buck stops there.
Either him or Brad Holmes, like they both have final say on those videos. Just to put a bow on the influencer thing, we did get an email, you know, so if you are listening to YouTube TV.
Oh, yeah.
Austin Callahan emailed us.
Also, generally, nflpodcast@pff.com, email us in things.
But Austin specifically in the title said, I bought Manscaped because of Sam, Steve, and Trevor.
Including, by the way, specifically, charity ideas, both the charity we can donate to and the thing we can do as a challenge, forfeit, whatever, afterwards. We've had a few of those come in, but not enough. And largely because I think I typically forget about it until the very last moments of the show and then ask people. So we're doing it closer to the top. Email us in.
All right, we'll get into the Rogers stuff, but also closer to the top, we're going to remind you, as a parent, your child's well-being is your top priority. Want to see them chase their dreams, embrace life's adventures, and thrive in the world. But you also know life can be unpredictable, And that's why it's important to plan for the unexpected so they can continue to thrive no matter what. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in just minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You can go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. So join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL, M-E-E-T, fabric.com/PFFNFL. Policy is issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Price is subject to underwriting and health questions. All right, Aaron Rodgers, Sean Payton. Sean Payton said some mean things about Nathaniel Hackett and the Broncos coaching staff from last year.
Sean Payton said effectively what everybody else said last year. He just said it out loud as a coach who took over the job of the guy that did that last year, which he's typically not done. Very typically not done. And then Mike Florio, you know, Pro Football Talk, has been on absolute fire lately with pearl-clutching reactions to these things, you know, and he had this big thing of, oh, everybody was rushing to defend Sean Payton, but this is just a mistake. You shouldn't have done it, you know? And then Payton himself comes out and says, I goofed. I had my Fox analyst hat on, and I should have had my coaching hat on.
Dude, that would have been rough if it was on Fox.
Well, this is my thing, right? So this is funny for a couple of reasons. Number one, in reference to the Florio thing, everybody was coming out and saying things, but they weren't defending him as much as simply saying, and almost everybody's head in very similar terms, which is itself suspicious. But they were all sort of saying, Sean Payton doesn't do anything by accident. Everything he does is deliberate. Like, he knows what he's doing with the media. They were all saying that, right? And then, so it's not like they were saying, so, like, he should have said it. This is great. This is fine. Like, no problem with the comments. They were all just making the point that this probably wasn't a mistake. And then Payton himself comes out and says, it's a mistake.
Big mistake.
But that doesn't mean he's telling the truth, right? But the funny part was, he was like, I was putting my Fox analyst hat on. The dude never said anything like that when he was working for Fox. Like, this wasn't like, this was a weekly occurrence. He was out there just blowtorching dudes in the NFL. He had the standard, you know, NFL guy moonlighting on TV approach of never say anything particularly controversial, because in 7 minutes' time, you're going to be back working with those people again. So keep it, you know, middle of the road, minor affronting type of stuff, right? So nothing about that made any kind of sense, other than I kind of agree with the people who say, you know, on the balance of probabilities, Sean Payton has been around the block enough times to know that, like, you don't generally set fire to the guy that was in your job 5 minutes ago publicly, you know? So there's probably a significantly larger chance than this was a deliberate act for whatever reason than he just accidentally lit him on fire in an interview.
Yeah, I mean, it's all overblown, of course.
But it is. I mean, that's a very...
Why would he...
He basically said this was the worst coaching job in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, he said what a lot of people were believing.
He did, but people don't say that. Coaches don't say that.
No, I know that. I mean, that's...
So that part is real.
That's the weird part. Like, you've burnt bridges with... Not that, you know, him and Nathaniel Hackett are going to be working together, but there's probably a lot of overlapping friends and colleagues in the industry and everything, and he probably rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Right. So that part, I think
I don't know that it has. The only thing it does is maybe put more of a target on Sean Payton when they start, if they start 1-4.
Also in week five.
And in week five.
Where they play the Jets.
But I'll get to that in a second. I mean, if they start 1-4, whatever, it's like, oh, you think it was easy, huh? Yeah, look how easy it is, you know, coaching Russ in the Broncos.
So let me ask you, if you agree with my assessment that this was some way calculated as opposed to, well, I had my Fox analyst.
What's the calculation?
This is what I'm asking you. What do you think he was trying to do with that, with those comments?
I think he did just.
So you think that he just goofed and just accidentally blowtorched Nathaniel Hackett?
Yeah, I mean, let's just give him credit and say there's a kernel of truth here that last year's Broncos may not have been well coached.
The actual legitimacy.
I don't have to coach against Aaron Rodgers, so I can say it. It was a bad coaching job last year, right?
The actual legitimacy of what he's saying is almost a separate conversation. Like, I don't think anybody is disagreeing with the foundation of his point, which is that may well have been the worst coaching job in NFL history. Like, in a period where Urban Meyer was, like, out kicking his own players and stuff, Hackett might have done worse. Remember, we were like a couple of weeks into the Nathaniel Hackett thing, asking,
debating that,
how soon is it to, like, how quickly can you fire a guy?
Yeah.
And so, and genuinely, that was like a few weeks. The
kicked
crowd,
an 80-yard field goal.
The
on
crowd
and
was
five.
Chanting the snap count, yeah. Like 6, 5, 4, so they weren't gonna false start again or delay of game. Like, it was a train wreck. So, I saw recently another clip of the Manning cast. You remember where they kicked the 61-yard field goal thing? So it was the Mannings and Shannon Sharp on this, like, yes. Just before the half.
Right.
Like, we make it, it was like third and a mile. They dump it off to Javonte Williams, who gains like most of that back. So now it's like 4 and 5, 4th and 5 from wherever it is, midfield. And Manning's like, okay, now let's call a timeout. Let's talk about this one. And it's like, clock keeps running. And then they're like, what are they doing? Eli's like, I don't know if you want to let the clock run down this, but then they end up calling the timeout, like, right, like, as the clock's about to expire, having burned 25 seconds almost down to the wire. And then it's like, they're going to kick it. They're kick what? And Manny's like, they're kicking the field goal. Just, like, disgusted with it. You know, that's one of, like, that was, you know.
Here's an 80-yard field goal at 4th and 5.
Yeah, 64 or 60-something. Absolute, like, bungling of a half of a just before the half situation, which was like standard. I mean, this was a complete and total train wreck. And we'll get on to the Aaron Rodgers thing in a minute. But what I find interesting every time Rodgers backs up Hackett, which he does quite a lot publicly, is when you listen to how he describes Hackett, it's never extolling the virtues of his coaching ability from an X's and O's standpoint or a scheme. It's always like, he makes it fun. You know, it's great. I love that guy. And you're like, I mean, that's part of it. You know, nobody's saying that you want to be playing for a, like, whip-cracking, dictatorial lunatic as coach. Fun is certainly a benefit. Feels like there needs to be more things than that, though, you know?
Yeah, so the only benefit to doing it is protecting your quarterback, right?
Yes.
That's it.
There you go.
So you're protecting Russell Wilson.
All the blame on the guy that isn't in the building anymore so that Russ doesn't feel like it's his fault.
I don't know if you need to do that publicly. I mean, I really think there's probably this human element of it where Sean Payton, like what you just described, he's grinding film from last year and he's like, what is this? What is this offense doing? Russ is in the wrong offense here. Like, why is he calling this? Why is he doing this from a game management standpoint? I just think the human element bubbled up and was like, man, that was bad last year. And he's been seeing all of this. He's seeing it in the building. He's seeing it in the players. He's seeing it on film. And then he just kind of slipped up.
If he had spent his entire TV broadcasting career talking like that, I would buy that. Like, if when Sean Payton became a Fox analyst, you got unfiltered Sean and it was just like bombs left and right. Oh, they are. Yeah, I get that. I buy that. He was in TV mode. He just spoke his mind. But he wasn't. Like, he was careful enough with his words when they mattered. And he knew he was talking. Like, this wasn't, I thought we were off the record. Like, he was an interview. He's not that dumb. This, like, he knew what he was doing. The only question is, what was he doing?
Yeah, so maybe he's protecting Russell Wilson a little bit.
Yeah. Now, let's get on the Aaron Rodgers thing. Because Rodgers was asked about it, obviously, on Back Together Weekend on NFL Network. And he gave a little answer.
With Pete Schrags.
Yeah, the end of which I think we have a clip of right here.
Thought it was way out of line, inappropriate, and I think he needs to keep my coach's names out of his mouth.
They're very, very professional looking here.
Yeah.
Good work, Tyler and team.
Slick.
Looking good.
So that was, he had like a minute long, whatever, reply to that. That was the end of which, the soundbite part. But again, he was like, he said, one of my favorite coaches ever. Not the best, favorite. And then was talking about how, you know, he makes the whole thing fun. He's like, it's like, this is a lot like how they were speaking about him when he went to Denver, which is, it's sort of like the wide receiver thing. If the first thing you're telling me is about his contested catch skills, like if the first thing you're telling me about a coach is he's just fun to be around.
Well, we'll see.
I feel like he should lead with something else.
It makes week five. So they do play in week five.
Yeah.
Broncos at the Jets. I'm sorry, Jets at the Broncos, which is interesting. But it's not like, well, Aaron Rodgers is going to have that one, you know, start on the calendar here. The Jets have to start in Buffalo on Monday Night Football, mm-hmm. or against Buffalo on Monday Night Football. And we're going to be sitting there after week one and be like, this is the Jets division now because Aaron Rodgers is in town. Or, hey, the Bills are still the top dog in the division. There's going to be massive overreaction on Tuesday, September 12th, the next morning, no matter what happens that first night. But we're going to get that right off the bat. Jets, Bills. Then the Jets have to go to Dallas. They're home against the Patriots, who they haven't beaten in forever. We'll see if Rodgers can change that. Then they have the Chiefs. So you got the defending Super Bowl champs in week four, and then you're at Denver in week five. I mean, the Jets could be sitting there at 1-3 going into this Broncos game, and it really doesn't matter. They could also be sitting there at 3-1, and it's like, all right, this is what they expected, right? This is what the Jets were. This is why they got Aaron Rodgers. So, I don't know. The week five game will be a little bit more interesting, but there's a lot. Then they have the Eagles right after that, by the way, the Jets. The beginning of their schedule is
brutal.
Absolutely brutal. And I think we're going to see this from a lot of AFC teams. It's going to look really rough on paper. As long as everybody stays healthy, those are some really good competitive matchups.
I mean, just across the board, we'll talk about this endlessly before the season, but there's too many good teams in the AFC and not enough wins for them all to get wins. Like, they're going to knock each other off, and there are going to be some teams that have crappy records that would, like, run the table in the NFC.
So, yeah, that was, I mean, it's fun stuff. I think Peyton, I mean, people say, speak your mind in the media.
Yeah. They don't mean that, though.
No, they want to attack you as soon as you do it.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? That's so mean. Like, at worst, Sean Payton was mean to his coaching friends.
Yeah. Well, not even and his coaching friends. Just a dude that happens to be doing the same job. Maybe he feels personally disrespected by how bad Hackett was.
Yeah. I can't believe you're in the same industry.
You're an insult. Yeah, you're an insult to the profession. Yeah. I'm going to call you out for it.
That's what I used to do to our PFF graders. If someone wasn't up to my...
Really?
Up to speed.
You just blow torch them publicly.
Yeah. This dude's terrible.
You go back to like Steve's 2010 tweets. It was like him ripping part-time PFF.
This other idiot grader compared to me.
Yeah.
Can't believe we're doing the same job
here. I didn't
get
a 97.5 accuracy number.
It's unbelievable. All right. What else are we talking about today?
Injuries, unfortunately. What? No. You want to do the Jonathan Taylor, Jim Irsay madness?
Yeah.
So the timeline to this apparently is a little bit more complicated than it was first reported to be. Apparently, he had asked for a trade several days beforehand to Chris Ballard. Had, I think, been told no, or at least it hadn't gone anywhere. And then Jim rocks up with the bus, which, I mean, I'm only looking at the outside of it, right? So who knows what it's like inside. But it doesn't look as fancy as Jerry's bus.
Oof.
I will say that. It looks older.
Jerry set the standard.
Yes. It looks older. It looks like, you know, you could have upgraded to a newer model by now, you know. And from, again, just billionaire mindset to billionaire. Just saying, Jim, it might be time to upgrade that bus. But anyway, I mean, maybe that's what did it, you know. Maybe if you had had Jerry's bus, Jonathan Taylor would have been suitably wowed. Anyway, the bus rocks up at practice. Jonathan Taylor goes on there for like an hour-long meeting.
Not Jerome Bettis, by the way, the actual bus.
Correct. And then almost immediately after that meeting, requested trade publicly. And, So.
So the bus meeting was basically like, hey, we're not giving you any sort of extension.
Probably. Now, the Colts have a really weird history when it comes to paying running backs. Because on the one hand, rather than pay Marshall Faulk, they traded him away. Rather than pay Eric Dickerson, traded him away. Rather than pay Edge, they traded him away, albeit after like a 7-year contract, so it's not quite the same thing. On the other hand, they traded a first-round pick for Trent Richardson.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to get
right.
to that one.
So it's like, how much do they care about running backs? Maybe they only care about running backs right out of the draft, like first contract, which would be a pretty like progressive and foresighty type of opinion way back in the 80s and the 90s. On the other hand, maybe they just have a completely random-ass approach to running back deals, and there's no earthly way of projecting what they're going to do.
I mean, the consistent thread is the Irsays there.
Yes, obviously. That's what I'm saying. They also, by the way, there's one guy I think that they have paid off the back of his rookie contract, and it was Joseph Addai. So it's like...
Yeah, there's really no...
Yeah, rhyme or reason to it. Now, they didn't give... It's not like Addai was breaking the bank when they gave him money, but...
Right. But yeah, there's really no consistency there. I've also heard Bill Polian, and I can't remember if it was what he said publicly, but he's all for
or to you while he was haranguing you for being an idiot.
Listen, we've been in cordial meetings as well. We've been in some non-cordial meetings. We've been in cordial meetings in the same setting.
While Bill was calling me a moron.
Does he go by Mr. Polian? Do people just throw the Mr. on him like he's an owner?
Do you get anything?
Can we just get rid of all the Mr. stuff? They're all just human beings like the rest of us.
Well, if you're it feels like, so this is like the America's version of, you know, the knighthood system. The Sir Richard Attenborough, whatever. Oh, yeah. Sir Alex Ferguson. Like, you reach a billionaire status, you become Mr. But do they have, like, once you hit the Hall of Fame, it feels like you should have a prefix to your name.
No, you get a jacket.
You do get a jacket.
You get a jacket and a bust. Yeah. Be happy with it. I'm not going to be like Mr. Joe Thomas this weekend.
The videos are right
Mr.
there.
Joe. I'll do that. Mr. Thomas. We'll call him Mr. Thomas. Next
All the Hall of Famers, like, opening their jackets. You know, they get mailed to them and stuff. And the fancy box that, you know, you open the box and the jacket is on a hanger, like attached to it. It's very fancy. But Joe Thomas's video, he's opening it like on the trash can in his garage. It's like, come on, Joe. Look, this is some social media moment. Can you find a better pedestal for
Joe's
the thing?
Great. Joe's great. He knows what he's doing. As a three-time Hall of Famer here, I have a jacket as well.
Oh.
Should I wear my Hall of Fame jacket this weekend? Hall of Fame weekend? Should I wear my Hall of Fame jacket?
Yes.
It is.
Ideally, we need to get you.
Not tailored exactly properly. So just saying, we do anything for the comedy.
We need to get you interviewing an NFL Hall of Famer in your Hall of Fame ill-tailored jacket.
I will wear it to training camp and see if we run into Barry Sanders up in Detroit or something.
Incredible.
So, yeah, we did not get the extra long sleeves or even just long sleeves.
Well, yeah, the not tailored part can go one of two ways, right? It's either we cover the length but not the width, or we cover the width and not the length.
None of it's good. None of it's good. But three-time Hall of Famer here. I do have a jacket. What are we talking about here? Where did we go?
Jonathan Taylor and Jim Irsay.
I was going to say Bill Polian was like, all these top running backs are in the Hall of Fame. Therefore, who cares if you spend a first-round pick on them? They're great players, you know? So like he loved running backs. The Jonathan Taylor thing comes on the back of – remember, so back up really quick, not to beat the whole running back horse again. Coming into this offseason, we said it's a very good running back class, especially at the top in the draft, and a lot of these top-name running backs are kind of hitting free agency.
Right.
Because I just saw people tweeting about, well, next year's running back class is going to look really good. It's like, no, it was this year's. And because there was a plethora of good running backs out there, draft and free agency – that's kind of what the leagues put their foot down and said, we're not doing that, right? We're just not playing that game anymore. We're out. So now Jonathan Taylor, who's still under contract, heading into the last year of his deal because he's a second rounder, he's heading into year four. He wants to get paid. And even the Colts, like if the Colts gave him 12 or 13 million up in that Saquon Barkley range, it probably wouldn't even be egregious for the analytics people, you know, but that's just not where the market is right now. So the Colts say no. And Jonathan Taylor's upset, just like Josh Jacobs and Saquon Barkley and everyone else, the rest of the running
backs
are upset.
The final turn of this, by the way, is that the Colts were then talking about putting him on the non-football injury list due to back pain that apparently was a result of some pre-report training camp thing, like a pre-existing back pain. Jonathan Taylor is going to come out and said, I've never had back pain. There is no back pain. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Get better sources. Essentially saying if they do put me on the non-football injury list, it's completely fake.
Yeah.
So essentially trying to put them in a bit of a bind. So they're not in a good place.
They also can't do that. I mean, he was working out just because he's not working out with the team in Indianapolis.
It depends how he does it, I think.
What?
It depends how he does it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if it's like a, you know, if he's falling off a three-wheeler or something like that. Like those are the
but
types
also
of things
if he's just like playing basketball. Or
like, basketball. Like those are the types of things that are in your contract.
Right. But there's a bunch. No, there's like, so it doesn't just have to be a specified thing in the contract. Like you cannot ride wave runners, you know, on a weekend.
Either
like,
way, the report, whether it's true or not, was that he was working out in Arizona.
Right. Anyway, so they're not in a good place. The question becomes, who's going to give up anything to trade for Jonathan Taylor? Which is the problem now, because you're not just trading for Jonathan Taylor. You're trading for Jonathan Taylor needing a new contract, or you're trading for Jonathan Taylor for 12 months.
See, I do wonder, So how good is Jonathan Taylor? He was the, let's use PFF WAR for a minute here, sixth most valuable running back as a rookie, most valuable running back in year two in 2021. Last year falls off. We see the grades up on the screen. 67 grade was not nearly as good. He's very elusive. I think if you're just saying who are the best pure runners in the NFL, I think Jonathan Taylor's right up there with Nick Chubb, maybe Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, just pure running part of the running back position. But remember, in 2021, Carson Wentz is the quarterback for the Colts. He has a mediocre season, right? He was kind of took care of the ball. They scored a ton of points. If there are arguments for running back seasons that had huge impact, I'd put Jonathan Taylor's 2021 up there with some of the best seasons of the last 10 years as far as impact on their offense.
Sure.
Like your Derrick Henry years with the Titans, your Adrian Peterson years, year or two with the Vikings. So that's kind of what you'd be chasing there. But then the downside is last year when the offensive line falls apart and Taylor gets all beat up and he's missing games in the middle of the year and the production falls off completely. That's the caveat with anything running back when it comes to investing.
That's the problem, is if this had happened – like if those years had happened in reverse order and Jonathan Taylor was making this plea essentially or making this play coming off the back of that 2021 season, now we'd have a discussion because, you know, people were giving him MVP hype that season. You could easily argue he was the best player on the team, all those kinds of things. Now you can't make any of those claims because the following season happened, which is the entire point of running back play, which is, okay, let's say for a minute you're correct, right? And his agent has said this, like, oh, he's your best player. Okay, well, if he was your best player and capable of carrying the team on his shoulders the way everybody claims he did in 2021, why couldn't he do it again the next year? What happened? What happened is his offensive line fell apart, and therefore Jonathan Taylor's impact disappears. The Colts last season, despite having Jonathan Taylor, ranked 30th in rushing EPA per play. 30th with apparently the best running back in the NFL. So if that's possible, if we entertain that that is now in the range of outcomes, that even with the best running back in the NFL, you can have almost the worst rushing success in the entire league, then why the hell would I trade, you know, a second round pick or a first round pick and give him $15 million a year if I can still have the worst running game in the NFL? Like, that's dumb. I wouldn't do that. So that's the problem all running backs have, is that almost every single one of them has one season like that where you can point to the evidence and say, it doesn't matter that he's good.
Yeah. Even Christian McCaffrey, who I think we'd all agree the Niners' improvement last year coincided with McCaffrey joining the squad and Brock Purdy taking over at quarterback. There are years where McCaffrey was just injured and didn't play. And not that injuries aren't unique to the running back position, they're just more common, right? That's they're going to get beat up. And then they also, as we've mentioned on other shows, the peak for a running back is years 1 through 5. And, you know, you get some productive years 6, 7, 8, but it's just rare.
It goes back to the conversation we were having with Bijan Robinson, or about Bijan Robinson before the draft, which is your starting point needs to be, do you already have a functional running game? Because the running back can't fix it by himself, right? So when we were talking about how high do you draft Bijan, the starting point was, is your running game already functional? Because if it isn't, stop, don't go any further, go pick up a different position, don't draft him here, because he won't fix it. We've already seen that with Najee Harris and the Pittsburgh Steelers. If you need the running back to come in and fix your run game, forget about it, you're already doing it wrong. So the starting point for any trade discussion for Jonathan Taylor needs to be, does the team already have a functional run game? Because if it doesn't, that team is immediately off the board, or they should be. So you say, who has a good run game that would be potentially interested in upgrading?
I want to get into do you have options?
The problem with that is most of those teams at this point in the season have either already addressed that, or the situation is so good for the run game that they can plug anybody in there and for a fraction of the cost can potentially have a dominant run game.
Give you an option.
Imagine Jonathan Taylor running behind the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line, right? That dude could run for like 2,500 yards and it would be insane. But the Eagles just got a collection of running backs for like $2 million total. So why would they?
Let's get into some other options. But first, if you want to get in on the fantasy action, but you're sick of managing your roster, Sick of player injuries ending your season? Well, you've got Best Ball on DraftKings. You get the best of your team all season long. This year, Best Ball on DraftKings is bigger than ever, with $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs. For now, for a limited time, you can join DraftKings, their largest Best Ball contest ever, and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished. Act now before this offer expires. Start playing Best Ball. Download the DraftKings app using code PFF. Enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest and snake draft your team for the season. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scorers. No ads, no drops, no trades, no I should have played him insteads. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So what are you waiting for? Head to the DraftKings app and sign up with code PFF and start playing Best Ball today. Join the DraftKings $10 million Best Ball Tournament and you'll get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars only on DraftKings with code PFF. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued as $10 DK. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. Ends August 9th, 2023. Nailed it. You said it couldn't be done, Sam. It couldn't be done on our last show. Mm-hmm. Sitting here practicing all weekend, and I nailed it.
I mean, it's the hard work pays off.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So you mentioned the Eagles, right? Like, what if they threw their name in the
right.
Jonathan Taylor?
But they wouldn't, because they've already got potentially the same kind of impact from, like, Rashad Penny.
What if, though? Let's think about this for a minute here. We're just 1 year removed from the San Francisco 49ers trading first-round pick for Christian McCaffrey. So the league has been trending this way. Like, let's not pay running backs. Let's not do this whole thing. But there's still a taker every now and again. There's still a person. There's still a team. What if you're the Eagles? And the other name I want to throw in there is the Ravens.
The Ravens?
Yes. If you're a team that has the ecosystem to create, say, a 2,000-yard rusher or a 20-touchdown season, right? Could you – let's say you trade a third for Jonathan Taylor. You trade a third-round pick because who the heck knows who's going to trade a first or a second for Taylor? I know a team just did for McCaffrey, but like you said, we're at just before the season. Is anybody really going to do that? What if the Ravens or the Eagles get Jonathan Taylor, you trade a third for him, you plug him into that system. With Baltimore, you're dealing with J.K. Dobbins and his injuries history. With the Eagles, as great as their offseason was, here, bring in Rashad Penny, bring in these cheap running backs, you're still dealing with Rashad Penny's injury history. Jonathan Taylor goes to these teams. He's going to run for 1,500 to 2,000 yards. They got the offensive line. They have the system. They have running quarterbacks who are going to help him. And then you're kind of trying to make someone else bite at the end of the year. He walks. Somebody pays him $14, $15 million. Maybe you get a comp pick back. I know the market's not going that way, but that's kind of like the risk, right? You're going to take 1 year of production. It will upgrade your team for whatever we say about running backs. It will upgrade a team. And it's teams that will use the running back in a high volume situation. It's a good situation for him to put up numbers, and then you let him walk.
Yeah, I mean, it does kind of depend what the compensation ends up being, because if it is a mid-round pick, you get closer to justifying that one-year rental type of deal. Now, you got to kind of wonder if you're Jonathan Taylor. Like, if you're unhappy and you want the extension now, you're probably also unhappy in a new venue if they're not giving you an extension. So are you?
Got to correct myself really quick. Second, third, fourth round picks.
Right. If you are willing to hold out or hold in and, you know, make the kind of noise that Jonathan Taylor is currently making, presumably you're not going to be any more willing to play for a team that isn't giving you the contract extension just because you got traded there. Like, you want your money now. You want the extension. You want the safety. You want the you know, the comfort, the guarantee of knowing that you're set, right? So I don't know that that's even an option, the idea of trading for him on a one-year rental without having an extension worked out or without being prepared to do that, because we don't know if he's going to do that at all. If it was, like, if that was an option, the idea of the one-year rental thing, that I think puts a few teams potentially on the table as kind of let's roll the dice. Let's go all in a little bit this year and let's try and make something happen. And the team that would be most interesting in that regard for me is Dallas.
Oh.
So Tony Pollard,
okay,
coming off his injury, which I think is probably irrelevant, but has never really had the workload, right? Never been given the option to carry load because Zeke Elliott has been there. And they steadfastly insisted on minimum splitting that pretty equally. What if Jonathan Taylor comes in to be the Zeke Elliott of that dynamic? Keep Pollard as the change of pace guy in Dallas. And now, yeah, you've got a ton invested in the running back. You can argue you're making the same mistake over again. But if you can do it for the one-year rental, now you're just sort of rolling the dice that adding Jonathan Taylor to that backfield is what propels Dallas to the point of, you know, Philadelphia, San Francisco, like puts them into that category of as good as anything in the NFC and really targeting a weak conference to make the Super Bowl and, you know, try and get over the hump that they haven't been able to get over for years.
It's an interesting one, man. I think the one-year thing is fine. Your point is also a fair one, right? Like, why would Jonathan Taylor go somewhere else and not have that long-term deal that he wants in Indianapolis? Well, I guess if you're the two teams I mentioned, the Ravens or the Eagles, you'd be like, look, come join. Look at our system. Look, you're going to shine here. Look what's going to happen at the end of the season. You make it through this season, you'll have 1,500 to 2,000 yards and 20 touchdowns. Like, that's the reality if you're an Eagle or if you're a Raven. And then you go to the market. We can't guarantee that for you right now, you know. But like Taylor doesn't have leverage. None of these guys have leverage is the problem because as good as Jonathan Taylor is, even the best running backs are in their prime, and they're not getting re-signed.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked a lot of what are the options? Do you accept just like 1 year extensions, basically like Saquon Barkley, where teams are saying, yeah, I'll take you for 5 years, but then I'm done. Do you chase longevity? Like we've talked about all these other potential solutions, but running backs just don't have leverage right now.
By the way, I can't believe we neglected to read out Jim Irsay's quote.
Oh man.
I need to find that
read his entire Twitter account.
Yeah, but the quote specifically was like some first rate madness. Oh, here we go. You want it?
Yes.
Jim Irsay, quote, "If I die tonight and Jonathan Taylor is out of the league, no one's gonna miss us. The league goes on. We know that. The National Football League rolls on. It doesn't matter who comes and who goes, and it's a privilege to be a part of it." End quote.
I mean, this is right up there with Kyle Shanahan being like,
yeah.
I mean, why would I name a quarterback for next week? We might not even be here. Might not even be here.
Yeah. I mean, that's
a great negotiating tactic, though. Who cares about the money?
Madness?
We could all die tomorrow.
I mean, that's easy to say.
Are we sitting here negotiating a contract, Jonathan?
It's like those people that's, you know, it's a very easy thing to say when you've got fistfuls of money coming, you know, everywhere. Like, yeah, we don't talk about money in this household. It's usually said by people that have a lot of money, you know? This is a similar idea.
Because money doesn't buy happiness.
Who cares about the money?
I've been trying to tell you that.
Well, okay, then give me more. I mean, if it's so irrelevant, throw some my way.
I would if I could.
Yeah.
Start a company.
I mean, that's a first-rate, like, string of consciousness, string of lunacy. Like, that's some high-level billionaireing. That's what you say after a couple of nights of really good billionaireing.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, he's got some gems through the years.
That's true.
And then Jonathan Taylor's basically like, I don't know what these rumors are. Not hurt. Never been hurt. So now it's starting to get personal.
Yeah. Well, because
But this is why a good team can swoop in and be like, Jonathan, we won't get personal with you.
But this is this is the issue with the only, because of all those egregious fines that we talked about before, which don't apply to somebody that hasn't signed their franchise tag, but do apply to Jonathan Taylor, who is under contract, he can't hold out. He has to hold in of some description, right? Which means show up to camp, but find some reason that you can't do your job, right? The phantom ankle injury that you developed during baseball.
I had a calf.
Whatever. The point is, you have to find some sort of fake injury that you can hold in and not do work, but actually not get fined for it. The counter to that is essentially what the Colts are doing, which is saying, oh, well, this injury showed up something outside of football, so we can put you on the non-football injury list, and your entire salary this year is jeopardized. You might not get paid at all. So that's the power struggle going on here. But ultimately, I can't really see a team being willing to give up much, if anything, unless they're convinced that they can do this one-year rental thing. I simply can't see anybody wanting to give up anything knowing that they're going to have to give him like a $15 million a year type of contract. I think the days of those deals are almost completely behind us now. And unless you have like this scenario playing out after the 2021 season that Taylor had, I just don't think the stars are going to align enough for somebody to get that kind of contract. So I don't see him getting it from the Colts. Like this isn't motivating them to go, oh, okay, cool. Here's your contract. They're going to dig their heels in. Somebody else needs to be convinced that they can get him without having to give him that deal. And I don't really see that happening either.
Who would be willing to pay? Would a team like the Bears, they still have more money to spend. They still have to get back to the floor, right? The Bears, because look, remember I said this around draft time. I said, it's easier for me to buy into the running back situation when you put him with a good running quarterback because you're at least adding a schematic advantage. And I thought the Colts might have that with Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor.
Which is another reason that they're going to dig their heels in and not let him leave for, you know, nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that should – Taylor would be primed to have another big year just by having Anthony Richardson there, having a healthy offensive line. Like, the Colts should be back on track, right? But I'd be curious if the Bears with Justin Fields, like, the Bears might – would they budge and maybe make the investment?
I mean, they just gave David Montgomery decent money.
Not like, the Bears.
The Lions got him. So the Bears signed somebody, though, right? Why is this?
You ever forget everything? This is why I said we need an off-season recap show. I told you need an off-season recap show because sometimes you
forget everything.
You're stuck in like lake mode or beach mode in the summer. They've got Khalil Herbert and Dante Foreman and Rashawn Johnson in the draft.
Okay, so they drafted Rashawn Johnson. They've signed Dante Foreman.
Like on paper, it's actually one of the worst running back situations in the NFL.
No, it's true. They've got room for Khalil Herbert. Or they've got room for Jonathan Taylor because Khalil Herbert is their lead back. I just the reason the Bears don't strike me as a great connection is because they just spent so much effort like clearing the cap situation to get the money to then spend it on a running back feels ill-advised. Having said that, I mean, I didn't think they would spend the kind of like I didn't think they would clear all the space to then go and sign Tremaine Edmonds to a market-leading deal either, like as their first move. So maybe, but they've definitely got the money to make it happen. And you can construct an argument that, in theory, their running game should function, right? They don't need, like, they won't fall at that first hurdle. Does your running game already work? Yes, it should be fine. So Taylor being added to that does make some sense.
Yeah, I know that the running quarterback is already going to make the running game good, but the reason why I bring these up is, like the Ravens chasing J.K. Dobbins a couple years ago when they're already making the Gus Bus a 5 yards per carry guy. They want to chase 6 yards per carry. There is a world where the running game can be so efficient. And if you do have a guy like Jonathan Taylor, he is very much like Nick Chubb, I think, where he's very good in all schemes, zone, gap. He's going to get your basic yards, but he also has home run hitting ability. He is very similar to Chubb, I think, in that respect. And now you're talking about bringing, you know, potential 4.5, 5 yards per attempt to like ridiculous numbers in the right system. I think that might be appealing for the right teams here. Eagles and Ravens. I might trade a 3.
A 3.
For Jonathan Taylor.
Uh-huh.
I mean, where's the market?
That's the problem. I think he's going to end up having to stay there and, you know, get through this year. I mean, we saw what happened the last time hardball was played from a running back. Like Saquon Barkley ends up coming back, re-signing for effectively the franchise tag plus $900K of incentives. And to give up or to do that, he had to agree to show up to training camp and essentially risk hell for a month. Like they have no leverage at all. So if that runs the same way, Jonathan Taylor's going to have to suck it up, show back up. Maybe he'll hold in during training camp, but at some point he's going to have to show up and play and then hope that he cashes in next offseason.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the other big injuries around the NFL. But if you haven't heard already, right now it's smooth sack summer, Sam. When you're playing in the summer sun, make sure you're scaped from pubes to bum. Yes. That's right. This is the summer to keep your balls cool while still looking hot with Manscaped. The leaders in below-the-waist grooming are making sure we all have a ball this summer. by giving your pants partners everything they need to stay fresh. Dive headfirst into smooth sack summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF. Someone already did, as I mentioned, Austin in the email, big fan of Manscaped, bought it because of us. The Manscaped Performance Package 4.0, it has everything you need to prepare for that summer bod. They have the built-in ultimate grooming bundle for your summer grooming. Their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch, and it gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. It's also waterproof. Beach, lake, shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0. It's the Manscaped Boxers, and the Shed Travel Pack. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. It's smooth sack summer, boys. Get on board or get left behind. I feel like my summer's over, though, really.
Yeah?
Yeah. August used to be summer, but now it's like back to work, football, you know?
Weather-wise, it's weird, though, because it seems to be extending the other way.
Like, well, it's very summery.
Right.
The
weather is going deeper into the year.
A lot of rain, a lot of hot.
A lot of hot.
Joe Burrow had a calf injury the other day, and as much as we've joked and mocked about calf injuries, they're...
Well, when they're fake, it's not a problem. When they're real,
no.
It's a potentially big problem.
I do call myself a calf injury survivor because, yeah, if you're looking at the transaction history... I was on the what we used to call disabled list, now the injured list, with a calf injury back in 2010.
Right.
It was not real.
No.
But I'm a survivor of a calf injury.
By the way, so...
Do you feel like... Do we have any data on this? I got to look this up. Haven't there been way more calf injuries the last year or two? Way more
calf injuries. There's certainly been way more in the last week or two and that I can think of too.
Last year I was calling it the year of the calf injury.
I can think of for a while. Just a quick... A quick tangent.
Love these.
Yeah, yeah. You were saying that, you know, we've had a lot of hot and a lot of wet, right, in terms of weather. What that creates is a lot of growth in vegetation, specifically lawn vegetation,
yeah.
Right? And we're in this classic example. You know the way, like, when you go to the store, and it's like, do I take all these bags in one trip or do I make multiple trips? And if you're male, you almost invariably try and do it at as few trips as possible.
Obviously, yeah.
Which is clearly a false economy because what you do is like ruin your hands and or the rest of you trying to take a million bags at once when you could just make multiple trips and save yourself time.
Bag might break.
I find that I am susceptible to doing the same thing when it comes to mowing the grass, right? It's like you leave it for a period of time and then the longer you leave it, the worse it gets and the harder it gets. Now, this gets complicated and you won't know this because you don't, well, I would hope you don't know this, but when you have a dog, the dog craps in the backyard.
Ugh.
The longer you leave it, not only does the worse it get in terms of like frequency of dog craps in the backyard, but the difficulty in identifying them becomes more harder when the lawn grows, right? So I finally was like, I have to cut the grass this weekend, because it had gotten so bad. And you're kind of shamed into it at this point, particularly the front, you know, because it's visible next to the neighbors.
It's embarrassing.
And yeah. We live in a place where there's no like fence delineating. There's just like a line that you mow to. So it's obvious when you haven't mowed it for a while because the person next to you has, and you can see the line where they stopped and, you know, you just let everybody down.
Look terrible.
Right. So you get shamed into doing it. But I feel like, so sometimes I'll mow the front just to look like I'm okay. And then the back just, they can't see.
Let it go.
Anyway, problem is that had gotten pretty bad. And there's dog crap in there that I hadn't cleaned up, which is difficult to identify now. So what I had essentially succeeded in achieving was to booby trap my own back garden with shit mines.
So you just mowed it all?
No, I mean, I tried to get what I could before, but you know there's more in there, and you'll only figure them out when you, like, go over the top of them. You're like, oh, look, there's a dog crap I didn't find beforehand.
Just chopping it up and spreading it everywhere.
Yeah, so bad is what I'm saying.
Fertilizer.
Don't allow yourself to be suckered into the false economy that will result in creating a minefield of dog poo in your back garden.
My kids don't poop in the backyard.
That's what I'm saying. I would hope that you don't know this as a concept.
We
but
don't,
it's possible.
We don't make that public, but we have a little, you know, text chain going back and forth, and it's, you know, in jest, you know, what's more difficult? A dog or multiple kids?
Yeah.
You know, like Q1 up for the kids here.
Theoretically, yeah.
Theoretically,
right.
Yeah.
Assuming you're not taking craps in the backyard.
Not recently. There was a point where my kids, because they had the pool in the backyard, they thought they could just pee in the backyard at any point because they could, you know, because one day they did because they had the pool in the backyard. So there was one point for like a few weeks where the kid like wouldn't come in. Like, no, I just go right here. I'm like, no, that's only when you get your bathing suit on and, you know, in the pool. And but it's just, you know, it's pee. It's
okay. Yeah.
It's July discussions. It's good stuff.
Anyway, calf injuries.
They're not great.
No.
So Joe Burrow's got a calf injury.
Which looked terrifying when he did it. Like, it was the classic non-contact injury. You know, guy's running and suddenly just hobbles to a stop. And you're like, uh-oh. And when it's a calf, I mean, the armchair doctors amongst us are like, wow, that looks like an Achilles. You know, just pop, man stops, can't put weight on it, that looks bad. And it turns out, so almost immediately they were like, no, it's a calf injury. You know, he'll be down a few weeks or whatever. But, I mean, the calf is connected to the Achilles. You know, they can linger quite a long period of time depending on what exactly is wrong with them. So whilst it's good that nothing catastrophic popped for Joe Burrow, it's not exactly great news that it's a calf injury and he'll be down for an unspecified period of time. The good news is it is training camp preseason. They can put him on the shelf for a while, and it's not like, you know, we're not losing anything necessarily.
So they do tend to recur, and I'm joking about it, does feel like there's way more calf injuries. I'm not an expert on this whole thing, but here's what I'm seeing. I've said a couple times on the show here, our players has the players union fought so hard for player safety, which is generally in the form of fewer headshots, right? Fewer hits to the head, fewer padded practices, and not like the old school training camp. Remember, you'd have two-a-days and you'd be double pads, and you know, everybody spoke longingly about the good old days where the players were tortured for the first 2 weeks of training camp. That's all it was pure mental and physical torture. So players have fought against that for years, and that has been their main focus in the CBA. And now what's the fallout from that? I'm not criticizing that stance whatsoever. The, you know, brain injuries, head injuries, fewer concussions, less wear and tear, well worth fighting for. Is there fallout there though, where the NFL is trying to have this ramp up period? They're trying everything they can now to have fewer lower leg injuries and all these other, you know, strains and things that aren't you know, long-term debilitating or anything like that, but they're short-term issues for just being on the field, the quality of the sport, and things like that. Is that kind of the cost of what they've fought for, which is fewer just off-season everything, right? Off-season OTAs, organized team activities at any point during the season, fewer practices, easier training camp. Is the cost now things like the lower leg injuries that are coming up?
Yeah.
I've got a little thread I want to skim.
I don't know.
Skim.
The NFL, I mean, we talked about this a little bit when Vic was on the podcast and we were talking about injuries and stuff. The NFL doesn't seem to be great when it comes to soft tissue injuries. Like, I compare it to rugby, not you one on the tally. Rugby doesn't get many of those anymore. Like, they've been wearing the, you know, the GPS stuff for years, like way before the NFL has been doing this stuff. And I think rugby has been very far ahead in terms of understanding load management, that loaded term now, and like when a guy is actually in danger of pulling something, you know, doing a calf, doing a hamstring, doing a quad, whatever it is, you very rarely hear anymore about those kind of soft tissue injuries where it's just because you've overloaded the guy. Whereas in the NFL, it still seems to be relatively prevalent. I don't know if that's a product of we only have limited practice time, so you kind of need to be out there doing your thing. I can't give you the practice off because that's when you have, you know, we can literally count in a double digit number how many practices we have before we're playing a game for real. So if we're debating, do you miss this one? Do you play this one? You're going to be practicing because I kind of need this. Maybe that is the inevitable product of that. But generally speaking, Zach Taylor, I think, should get quite a lot of credit for that load management concept. Like, he generally has been pretty good at protecting players. So maybe the Burrow thing is just a freak accident, you know, not accident, freak occurrence. And they're going to do a good job now in terms of keeping him on the shelf and not risking him to anything. But it's a worry if you're the Bengals.
He had a calf sleeve on.
Yeah, already.
Prior to that. So
which suggests that he was at least like aware that something was on the borderline and played through it.
Something was tweaked prior to that. So I just want to read what Doc Flynn, at Doc Flynn NFL. This is Jessica Flynn. She works for various places, 33rd Team, Boston Sports Journal. I just want to skim this 8-part thread with a little bit of background here. She says, NFL training camp lower extremity, or LEX, L-E-X, muscle strains have a huge cost. Players miss more time due to LEX strains than any other injury. So if you didn't care much about the calf, groin, or hamstring strains this time of year, you should, basically. The NFL player health and safety has seen a disproportionately large number of LEX strains in training camp in the early preseason. That's over 30%. And those injuries spiked again when pads came on, but it's only preseason, right? Nope, that's wrong. LEX strains account for a ton of lost player time, and they recur at a rate over 30% during the regular season. So this is notable for Burrow,
right?
The types of things that could recur. So, you know, when you see Joe Burrow practicing with a calf sleeve and suffering an acute calf strain, restrain, it's not nothing. This is why Player Health and Safety Committee mandated some changes to training camp, a ramp-up schedule, and basically she just goes into why they have to ramp things up and how they had made gains in previous years because of that. So it's not something that they're not working on, but you know, it's something to really keep an eye on, because this is you're cutting down probably on concussions and, you know, head injuries and everything, but less practice time. You have to be careful with some of these other strains here.
Yeah. I mean,
so is he going to be like, what do you do if you're the Bengals? They're talking about like a 7-week injury that puts you right at the beginning of the regular season. It sounds weird, but like the 17th game, it's just 1 week, but it doesn't it make the season just feel longer, like feel like a little bit more of a grind in a 17 game schedule? Are you more likely to sit a player once or twice to make sure that you're going to get through the year?
I just think, okay, the AFC is brutal. The AFC North is brutal. It's not a given that Cincinnati makes it out of that division at all, even though we think that they're a Super Bowl contender. That's just the reality of the whole dynamics at the moment with the AFC. That being said, it's more important for Joe Burrow to be there in December and January than it is for him to be there in September, you know? So even though the backup is Trevor Siemian, if we're even remotely in the realm of doubt, play Trevor Siemian for the first 2 weeks if you have to. Like, I mean, it's not the same degree of extreme, but I kind of treat him the same way I treat, you know, Von Miller for Buffalo. I don't need Von Miller in September. I need Von Miller in January. So if I have to sacrifice September to get him in January, that's what I'm going to do. Now, that's easier for Buffalo because you expect to win games in September even without Von Miller. Whereas if Cincinnati is starting Trevor Siemian, it's absolutely no guarantee they're winning any games, right? But I think they have to take that approach of banking on the fact that they're good enough without Joe Burrow for a few weeks if that needs to happen, because they can't win with Trevor Siemian against Patrick Mahomes. They can't win with Trevor Siemian against, you know, any of the other AFC powerhouses in the playoffs. So you need Burrow back for those. Like, and if you need to say, you know, we'll run the risk for 2-3 weeks at the start of the season, fine. Like, just do that.
I also wonder if you're a team like the Bengals, what is the with only one bye, right? Are you less inclined to push for just when there's two byes a few years ago? Really valuable to get that home field advantage. Really valuable to get the one bye right now, but it's also less likely. So you're in a conference with the Chiefs and the Bills and all these other teams competing for the one bye. Is the most important thing just let's focus on the division? Let's just get to the playoffs. We get to the playoffs, Joe Burrow's healthy. That's the most important thing for us. I think you're more inclined to do that with only one bye, the extra playoff team. You're more likely to just say, let's just make sure we get into the tournament and then go.
That's the thing. Like, if I think the bye week, the number one seed is still really important.
Of course.
Like, and you know, Patrick Mahomes talked about this on Quarterback, the Netflix thing. Like, if you can get that, it's still huge. But if you're looking in the AFC, you're going to have to play these teams anyway. Like, you know, we joked about it before, the Rugby World Cup, right? Ireland have gotten hosed in the draw. they're probably going to have to face one of the top two teams in the world in the quarterfinals.
Very sad.
And, you know, your point was, well, they're going to have to beat them anyway, right? Now, it's not necessarily true. If they got on the other side of the draw, they might not have to face a good team until they got to the final, right? In the AFC, there's no easy path now. There's too many good teams. You're going to have to beat one, if not all, of Buffalo, Kansas City, you know, Miami, like all these good teams. So the bye is huge because you can take one off the slate. You have to play one fewer. On the other hand, you're still going to have to play, you know, at least two of them. So you might as well, like, the being able to be there is the important thing. And if you need to risk, like, if you need to sacrifice seeding to make that happen, fine.
All right, so the other big injury, there's a few of them, but Jalen Ramsey with a meniscus. He already has surgery on his meniscus. And initially, he's got this knee injury. The reports are, okay, there's no ACL tear or anything like that. This could be a 4 to 6 week injury. And then Rap Sheet tweets out the other day, they did the surgery. Jalen Ramsey's working to get back for December.
A full meniscus repair.
Full meniscus repair. Rap Sheet also copied and pasted the agent tweet that is like, this is why the agents negotiate fully guaranteed. This is why. Good job. Very good job by the people that feed me this information. Very good job. The people that tip me off to news, you guys are great at your job. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to say, great negotiating.
Well, the second half of that tweet is, while it takes him off the field for the first half of 2023, it's the best long-term health option for Ramsey. It likely lengthens his career. That's a good, you know. I always thought that when I got injuries. You know, it's a bummer, but this will lengthen my career. This is a good thing. I should be grateful for this knee injury.
Yeah, then you tweeted it out. Don't worry, guys. Extended my career.
So, but the funny thing is, there's disagreement as to how long this guy is going to be out amongst the medical community, you know, the Twitter medical people.
Art, not science.
Right. One person was like, Ramsey likely out 3 to 4 months. Don't see the dips we wouldn't expect to hit for Ramsey when he does return. So essentially backing up the Rap Sheet report fed from the agent. Dr. David Chow quote tweeted the Rap Sheet thing saying, lucky to play at all this season. So this Ramsey thing could be keeping him out till December, or it could keep him off the field completely this year, and the Ramsey signing from Miami, the great season that we were expecting to happen, is put on hold until next year.
Oh, man. I was looking at some numbers recently that had Miami looking really strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean they already look really strong, but a big part of that's Ramsey, and we don't get to see Ramsey in Vic Fangio's defense with Xavier Howard on the other side.
Real bummer, aside from anything else. Like, forget how long he's out for. The fact that we're not going to see it at the minimum for the first 3 months of the season sucks.
I know. It's rough, man, because then in that division, right, Ramsey in that Fangio defense against Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, against Josh Allen and the Bills, like all of that stuff was really exciting to see. I think it also points back to, remember, the Dolphins did not have that many draft picks. Their first pick was in the second round, and they picked Cam Smith, the cornerback out of South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look like a need whatsoever. They had just signed Jalen Ramsey. They have Xavier Howard. They have both of those guys locked up. They've got a pretty deep cornerback room, and they still draft Cam Smith. I think it always points back to making sure that you're drafting the best players, not necessarily for need. They did just sign Eli Apple to maybe play on the outside and compete.
To a team that has Tyreek Hill on the roster.
Oh, that's right. I didn't even realize that. That's going to be great.
Tyreek Hill
tweeted. Be locker mates.
Well, he tweeted out something like, practice on Monday is going to be interesting. And Jalen Ramsey was like, play nice, kids. You know, settle down. let's not reignite that.
This is why you need to know the social media history.
Mm.
That's why this stuff's important. That's why we break it down for all of our listeners.
The downside, so they've done a good job in terms of contingency. Like the Cam Smith thing, and he's played inside before. I don't like him in that role necessarily. Like, I don't like him as a direct replacement for Jalen Ramsey if Jalen Ramsey was going to play inside and, you know, do what he did the last couple of years for the Rams in Vic Fangio's system. Cam Smith can do that. Like, he did it his final season in college.
Better outside.
I just don't think he's as good at it as he is playing outside. So they're better equipped to deal with that than other teams, but I don't like that as a solution, if that's what it is.
Yeah, it is. Man, I hate these injuries. No one else get hurt for the rest of the preseason.
Right. Stop that.
We want to watch the best football.
It does suck.
I'm rooting for the football.
How quickly, you know, training camp's back. Everyone's, you know, jazzed for football. There's highlight videos everywhere. And then, like, immediately, like, bam, injury. God, come on. Stop it.
I want to watch the best football. So I don't want to see guys like Jalen Ramsey get hurt. It's not fun. So, yeah, that's a big blow to the Dolphins. And, again, they have some depth there, but it's not – man, it's not going to be the same because Ramsey can still play. And, you know, that's the, you know, older players get hurt a little bit more. And when you're taking chances on older players, not that he's that old, but, you know, some of that stuff comes with the territory.
I mean, I put him in the same kind of category as the Von Miller thing. Like, if they can get him back just for the playoffs, that's huge. The difference being, at least now, you expect Miami to be a little bit more on the playoff bubble than you do Buffalo.
Right.
So if they're in the middle of December, you know, week 15, three games left, there's going to be temptation to push him out there to get them into the playoffs in a way that Buffalo theoretically shouldn't need to do. Like, Buffalo could probably look at this and say, Von Miller doesn't need to take a snap until January. We don't need it to happen. We're going to make the playoffs anyway. Maybe it'll affect seeding, but, you know, it's more important to have him there in January. We should have that locked up. Miami, and they may be better than I'm expecting them to be, or they may, you know, get the right end of results early on that they're going to be in a different position. But, you know, if it's like last season, Miami's going to be looking at those last three games going, God, we could do with Jalen Ramsey being back out there. How close is he? You know, can we get him out there in week 16? That's where you run into danger.
Yeah, so hopefully he'll be back sooner rather than later. Was there any other – I want to talk Danielle Hunter, signing with the Vikings after being on the trading block, but is there anything else – injury-wise that we're missing here?
Not injury-wise, I don't think.
Or news-wise?
News-wise is a couple bits. So do your Danielle Hunter thing, and then there was something else I want to talk about.
So on Saturday, all the rage was, all right, Danielle Hunter's back on the trading block, and, you know, who are the suitors? Where should he go? And then on Sunday, the Vikings locked him up for a year at least.
Yeah, with a no-tag clause.
Yeah, Look, I told you there are some numbers I've looked at recently too that like the Vikings. I'm going to be sneaky high on the Vikings, I think, this year. I'm going to be influenced by the numbers.
The numbers.
As our old boss used to say. I might be influenced by the numbers here on the Vikings.
What numbers exactly?
A little internal metric we have in projecting teams.
Which is doing what?
IQ exclusive. Just looking at the players. Projected war.
Projected war. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it likes the Vikings both because, you know, Cousins has graded well and been on the field and consistent, so he projects pretty decently. But even I looked at the quarterback and non-quarterback situations.
Yeah.
You're getting – it likes the value on the offensive line. Of course, Justin Jefferson is going to be a huge piece of that. But then I think it's like the sneaky good ads of Marcus Davenport for just this year. You know, Davenport projects pretty well.
Is it at all concerned by their cornerback depth chart, which is...
Well, part of it, I think, projects like guys like Mekhi Blackman really well because you know, it's adjacent to my draft model, which liked Blackman.
Currently is not slated to start.
No, I understand that, but he'd have to be on there.
Right.
So
look, neither, in fact.
I'm not saying anything set in stone.
Their last two kind of encouraging cornerback draft picks of Mekhi Blackman and Andrew Booth, neither of whom are currently starting for them.
We don't know who's really going to be starting yet.
No, but just,
brought in Byron Murphy, who's a solid player.
But now we're in this world of we get to see who's running with the ones in training camp. Therefore, we project starting based off six practices.
Yeah, Juwan Williams, Caleb Evans.
Yeah, and Byron Murphy. That's your starting trio. That's a little bit worrying.
Yeah, I understand. I'm not saying they're winning the Super Bowl or anything. I just might be higher on them than I thought, where it was going to be this whole, hey, you know, they're not going to win as many games. They won't win all those close games. Maybe they're going to play better.
It's fine.
This year.
You know, don't shy away from your...
But the Danielle Hunter move, I think, helps a lot. Having Hunt, it'll be really interesting because Hunter's got the 1 year remaining now.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcus Davenport was a 1 year signing. The Vikings are playing this long game. They'll get a year of production out of both guys. Do they let both guys walk? Are they working this comp pick game to try to replenish the roster? But I think for this year, those guys were, you know, could be an interesting tandem having Hunter and Davenport.
And they're both on sort of prove-it deals.
Yeah.
Like, if either one of them wants the giant payday next year, they kind of need to come off this season with a really good year. Like, hit the open market. For Hunter, he will hit it because they can't tag him. Or so if they don't lock him up, he's hitting the open market. And for Marcus Davenport, theoretically, that's what's going to happen as well. So each one of those guys is motivated to have a really good year, because if they don't, they're not getting the giant payday they're looking for.
I just think we're finally getting into Kwesi's mind just a little bit here, because they get rid of Dalvin Cook. They made a trade for TJ Hockenson. Apparently, you know, last year the discussion with Kevin O'Connell and Kwesi about the importance of a tight end. I think we saw Hockenson as a really valuable piece, specifically in games where Justin Jefferson was taken away. So you got a full year of Hockenson now. That's where the Vikings have chosen to invest at pass catcher, basically. They spent a lot of money on tight end two in Josh Oliver. And then they haven't spent a ton of money at edge on two players where you could have locked them up long-term, Danielle Hunter or Marcus Davenport. And instead, they've got them on, like you said, the one-year prove-it deals, where maybe they're going to say, we're going to get the value out of these guys, let the rest of the league pay them, get the comp picks, and replenish the roster that way. I think we're starting to see some of Kwesi's economic background, or at least like his style, his decision making come through in the roster here. And I'm also interested because they got Eric Kendricks. They're getting rid of veterans for younger players, and of course, for them to be good, you need the Brian Asamoahs of the world, you need the Andrew Boots of the world, their young draft picks over the last couple of years to step up and play well. This is an old school NFL strategy to let veterans walk, let the young players take over. We'll see how it plays out for the Vikings. They might be a little underrated.
They might going be a into little this underrated. Year.
The quarterback room in that system with Brian Flores, unless he adjusts, he's a 40-50% man coverage type of guy historically. If he doesn't adjust, might be rough.
That part's going to be fascinating.
Like, will Flores adjust a little bit?
Right. How Flores actually sets up that defense. Now, you can argue, and there's data to say this, that simply changing a bad producing system is beneficial. Even it doesn't matter what you're changing it to, right? Simply change for change's sake when things are in a rut is a good thing. So the Vikings getting rid of Donatell, shifting defense coordinators, is the important part. Kind of like it didn't, like Doug Peterson. How much of it is Doug Peterson being really good, and how much of it is Doug Peterson simply not being Urban Meyer and hoofing his own kickers up the ass during like camp? Like, that's a real question. So for Flores, not being Ed Donatell is a positive. Now the question becomes, how much of a positive is he actually adding on top of that with a complete 180 in terms of system and scheme and all those kinds of things? And what can he create out of this defense? That, I think, is an interesting thing. There was somebody tweeted this at us. There was an interesting article that effectively said that Flores and Chan Gailey got together when he was at Miami and created an offense using PFF data. But they did a bit of a more sophisticated version of your thing where you like ran the thing. Oh, look, let's just play coverage. Cover the gaps. Cover the hot spots.
Yes.
They kind of did that, but for offense. They looked through this and were like, the only way this offense survives is if we run RPOs every play. And that's what they did.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Flores, I've heard some things about Flores. I could see him liking the PFF data. That's all.
Yeah.
Might be a PFF guy.
Okay.
Might be into our data. For whatever reason. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I would, defense, you just cover where they throw the ball.
Just go where they throw the ball.
That's all you have to do. By the way, I think we should end every show the way I did last week, which is just read the training camp reports and buzz and tweets.
Yeah.
I think it's a great way to finish the show, at least.
Okay.
And react to them.
Well, so what I was going to ask.
What else did you want to bring up?
Okay, a couple of bits. Did you see, you did see, because we talked about this, but one of my favorite pieces of training camp news so far was the initial report that Darnell Wright came camp in phenomenal shape, right? Working out in the offseason, crushed it, dominated the conditioning test that everybody does when they're first day back, you know, to see where are we in terms of your shape and all those kinds of things. It later emerged that the reason he was so amazingly good at the conditioning test was because he looked at the requirements and mistakenly read the wide receiver conditioning test, and so was prepped to do that. Which, when you're prepped to do the wide receiver conditioning drill, the offensive line conditioning drill apparently is a breeze.
I'm sure it's a lot easier than what the receivers have to do.
So apparently that was the story. Darnell Wright crushed the conditioning test because he was prepped to do the receiver one.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Man, my
On the other hand, it would raise some questions about what kind of details guy he is.
What's more important?
When you're reading the playbook, are you actually, you know, reading it, or you just get the general gist?
What if week one he starts running out routes? It's like, no, man, you're pass blocked on this play.
Like, what if he zones left instead of right? Just like, the details of these things are important.
Oh, that's a good story. I like that.
I did like that.
I don't know if that helps or hurts my Darnell Wright projections.
Yeah.
Where I was lower on him.
Uh-huh. But they were like, let's do that again. He's in incredible shape.
That's fantastic.
What other bits of interesting news were there? So the other thing I wanted to say was talk about. We've got, a few days into camp. There's various bits of highlight reels and, blah, blah. What's real and what's fake? We talked before, don't fall into these landmines of training camp hype. There are things that are going to show up. You know what they are. They're going to be coming, and you're going to buy into some of them. Is there anything out there at the moment that you are actually very close to buying, even though you know it's probably silly?
I don't think I have a good feel for – I don't know if I have, a good list of, here are the 5 or 10 things that are most common that I'm hearing.
I mocked this previously.
Give me the list. I mean, Garrett Wilson's right.
Not even the list. I mocked this previously. I think it's – I'm getting close to think there might be substance to it. The Justin Ross thing might be real. So Justin Ross, wide receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs, second-year player. He went undrafted, right?
Yes.
Guy with an ridiculously unfortunate injury history. Yeah.
His best year was his freshman year at Clemson.
Right.
Yeah.
Then a very long list of injuries. But he's 6'4", 215 pounds, was supposedly going to be, an elite wide receiver prospect, but injuries took that away from him. Chiefs pick him up as an undrafted rookie. Last year, there was a bit of training camp buzz. This guy, Justin Ross, the Chiefs are going to found a steal, with Mahomes, blah, blah, blah. And then it was happening again early this camp. We predicted that. I tweeted out something like, he's going to be, the next generation's Dante Moncrief. Every year you're going to see the training camp buzz about this guy. But given the state of that wide receiver room, I'm kind of buying that it might manifest. He's got a skill set that they don't have outside of that. He's got Mahomes throwing him the ball. He's starting to get some play with the ones. Things are coming together.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy at all. I could see Justin Ross.
Now, the flip side of that is
complimenting him, and we'll see what happens with Kadarius Toney and Marcos Valdes-Scantling being the deep threat.
The flip side of that is, MVS is already entrenched as one pretty key part of that thing. Kadarius Toney's not going anywhere. They're presumably going to want to ramp up Sky Moore's role, particularly in the slot with no Juju. Rashee Rice has also been really impressive.
Rice is also getting hyped up.
So we're sort of running out of roster spots. So on the one hand, you're hyping him up, going, hey, this guy could be a real factor this season for Mahomes. On the other hand, you're they need to carry 6 or 7 wide receivers for him to even make the team.
But I think
– which one of those is more likely to happen?
So, but I think the Chiefs proved last year that it doesn't matter now because they're not going to be as top-heavy. It'll still be interesting when Travis Kelce someday loses a step or isn't there and what that offense looks like. But I think – going into last year, we said, okay, what's going to happen with the Chiefs? They're not as top heavy. You don't rely on Tyreek Hill as much. And they spread the ball around. And they replaced – they did. They strategically tried to replace Tyreek Hill with multiple players, and they were very successful in doing that, completely changed the offense, and it was a shorter passing attack, and they adjusted to the league. I don't know if it matters. I mean, they had guys like Justin Watson being productive at times. Richie James has been stealing the show at practice too.
And as a return guy, so –
Richie James has always been a sneaky, productive player, whether it was with the Niners when he had opportunities, whether it was with the Giants. I think they're going to be fine.
That's what I'm saying.
But
I'm
you might say, hey, Justin Ross only has 30 catches this year. Did he really break out? It's well, it was just an opportunity thing because of all the guys he's battling against.
That's what I'm saying. It's a coin flip between he's actually a really a big factor in this offense and he doesn't even make it out of training camp. He's back on a practice squad because they just have a load of guys. But there's an opportunity there for any one of them to step up and actually be a big part of this offense because their number one wide receiver, Juju Smith-Schuster, is not there anymore. And everybody else is some form of unknown and or role player like MVS.
Yeah, I think that's fair to buy into.
So I'm kind of buying the Justin Ross hype. The videos that are coming out, he's making some really impressive plays. He is getting time with the ones. And he does have a like he does have pedigree. It's not like this is a nobody who's impressing. He did have pedigree whose an injury's robbed him of you know, a draft spot that would have had some cachet attached to it.
Now, I do appreciate the listeners on who highlighted to us the other Jay Ross, John, retired. And I got a lot of tweets my way saying, sorry, Steve, I mean, look, if when I have a GM job next year.
You still call him. Hey, John, you busy?
We'll get him out of retirement.
Right.
We'll get him back. You telling me he can't roll out of bed and catch 10 passes for 250 yards?
Somebody picked up the phone and got Jimmy Graham off the couch. You would, you know, you'd be calling John Ross every
John Ross is twice as fast as Jimmy Graham. So that's why. I'll call John. Next year.
If Pac-Man Jones can still run a 4.5 40 at 40, then John Ross can still run pretty fast.
Yeah. I mean, he'll probably drop from 4.22 to like 4.3. But yeah, we'll make the best of it. So yeah, pour one out for John Ross. Wasn't the Hall of Fame career, maybe?
No.
Not when we poured one out for Joe Thomas. We're not gonna pour one out for John Ross.
No.
Because he's not a Hall of Famer. But yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Do you want to read some training camp hype, or do you have other guys want to buy into here?
No, I wanted to ask the question as to how much should we be buying into the Justin Ross thing.
There's
a lot of other bits of hype, you know, left, right, and center, hype all over the place.
Give me some good hype.
Good hype? Dalton Kincaid has been impressing a lot.
Yeah, I mean, some of the descriptions are like, so I feel like this happens to be every year. I'm like so excited to see the rookies, and you watch their first preseason game, and it's like, that's exactly what I saw in college. They were the same exact player they were 9 months ago. Every now and again, you get a surprise.
Kincaid,
every description of him, smooth, great pass catcher, works the middle of the field, hands, ball skills. It's like, yeah, that's what he does.
Yeah, he's intriguing because on the one hand, rookie tight ends tend to struggle. On the other hand, they're not really going to ask him to be a tight end.
Well, it's like Kyle Pitts. Pitts straight up played wide receiver, had over 1,000 yards as a rookie.
Now, the difference is, you know, Kyle Pitts had legitimate sort of ex-wide receiver skills, and they used him in that role quite a lot. Whereas Kincaid, they're basically going to use him as their slot receiver. They've got Dawson Knox. They have a real tight end. They're essentially going to ask him to just be their big slot and do that. And he's amazing at that. So all the stuff that he was really, really good at in college immediately, I think, should translate. And by the way, he isn't just good at being a receiver. So it's not just like catches well, run after the catch well. Like, his sophistication in terms of understanding defenses is higher than almost any receiver, wide receiver or tight end I can think of coming out of the league or coming out of college in a long time. Like, he does stuff that most of the tight ends or most of the slot receivers in the NFL don't do now, right? Like, so the way I describe it is, a lot of the times you'll see players and you say, oh, this guy understands how to play in zone. And it's usually a case of like, identify its zone, identify where the defense is moving, and head to the gap, right? Head to the space in between the players. And that's good. That's a positive thing that, you know, you're going to need to do if you're going to be successful against zone coverage in the NFL. But the next step is understanding how you can actually manipulate those spaces and widen them with what you're doing. So don't just run in a straight line to the center of that space and then turn around and look for the ball. Run a route in such a way that will make a player move in the opposite direction and actually widen the space in the first place. He does that already. And there really aren't many tight ends that have that level of understanding to actually work towards a defensive back's leverage or a linebacker's leverage, get them moving in the wrong direction, and then break into the gap that they're opening up. He already does that. In addition to being great after the catch, in addition to having great hands and being a great athlete. So if he's able to do that stuff from day one in the NFL, that's a huge leg up over almost any, you know, rookie that's coming into the league. And then you add the fact that they don't need him to do any blocking, because they've already got Dawson Knox. They're basically not going to saddle him with that stuff. That's where rookie tight ends struggle the most anyway. So you're removing the thing he's likely to struggle with the most from his plate completely, and you're leaning into the thing that he's unusually good at. The pieces are there for him to be very good right away.
The two things I'll say there, I like what you've highlighted as his strength there. I do have to say the strength of feel for the game and finding soft spots in zones might be more difficult at the NFL level than it is in college. However, for this Bills offense to be ticking, again, I always come back to options. And, you know, when Stephon Diggs is taken away, can Gabe Davis step up and do it? Can Deonte Hardy be the deep threat opposite Stephon Diggs? Can, like, what does Dalton Kincaid actually just have to be? To me, I think he just has to be like what Dalton Schultz was for the Cowboys the last couple of years. I don't think Kincaid needs to be this mismatch weapon in year one, right? It'd be great for him to do that at some point, but be this mismatch weapon who's going to catch 10 passes and every time you put a linebacker on him, he's going to win and you're going to feed him the ball. You could do that once in a while, but honestly, he just has to be that find a soft spot in the zone, dependable receiver, make a great catch every now and again, but be the guy when Stephon Diggs is taken away, take a little pressure off Stephon Diggs and Gabriel Davis. Let Gabriel Davis be a deep threat. Let Deonte Hardy be a deep threat. Let Stephon Diggs be the all-around everything else. And when those guys are covered, Dalton Kincaid is the next guy. And just for comparison's sake, like Travis Kelce, just for comparison. Travis Kelce in 2014, he wasn't playing like a Hall of Fame tight end. He had 67 catches, 860 yards. It was like, wow, he was injured in 2013 most of the year. His first full season's 14. And Kelce just has a good, productive season and then starts to grow. Rob Gronkowski was kind of similar, right? You saw flashes as a rookie, caught a lot of touchdowns, but he wasn't special until year two. So I think that's okay for Kincaid to not even have to show the special until year two, but if he's a dependable 50 to 70 catch guy this year, like I think that's actually a reasonable expectation and helps the Bills offense immensely.
Yeah. Other hype, Brandon Ayuk has apparently been unstoppable all the way through training camp. Remember, Ayuk was a guy that wound up in Shanahan's doghouse early on. And then it sort of feels like Shanahan treated him with that approach of, I'm going to be really hard on this guy. I'm going to coach him really hard, make sure he understands what's expected. Which goes one of two ways, right? Either you essentially break that guy or he ends up responding with exactly what you want and becomes the player you expected him to be. Shanahan may have induced that out of Brandon Ayuk and he may be a superstar this year.
Ayuk, the Niners just have incredible depth.
I'm also most interested, by the way, in training camp videos, hype that back up my priors.
Oh, absolutely.
So Brian Branch had a couple of phenomenal plays. And I'm like, why did Brian Branch go in the second round? That guy is one of the top 10 players in this draft.
Yeah. You did what we don't love, but you completely acknowledge I'm going to overreact to this video. Oh, yeah. And
Put that out multiple times already. I am 100% buying into any training camp video, highlight, hype, buzz, tweet that is backing up my prior takes. And my prior take is that Brian Branch is the top 10 player in this draft. Therefore, if you show me a video that supports that evidence, I will endorse it 100%. The first clip on that, he's running stride for stride downfield with Khalif Raymond, who is a 4.3 guy, who not just is a 4.3 guy, but is like off the charts in terms of like separation per play. Not a 4.3 guy with like 4 or 5 game speed. A legit 4.3 dude that separates and outruns everybody.
He's their deep threat that I'm trying to add to every team. Wide receiver 4 yes. runs behind the defense for 25
and
yards per catch.
Brian Branch are like, you know, miserable athlete that can't run with anybody. That's why he goes in the second round, is running stride for stride with him without getting hands on him, by the way, until later in the route. It's not like he got to jam him with the line and disrupt his release. Runs with him stride for stride and then breaks up the pass when it arrives there.
All right, so I'm going to read some of these tweets here. I didn't realize this because in my head, so we're going to Colts camp tomorrow.
Yeah.
In my head, it was still like a week away. Uh-huh. So I read this tweet earlier and I was like, oh, whatever, he'll be back by the time we're there. But Anthony Richardson has a procedure on his nose to correct his nasal septum.
Yeah.
He's going to miss practice today on Monday. And depending on how he feels, we expect him to return tomorrow. So we might be driving up to Colts camp and there's a chance it's not the Anthony Richardson show.
Yeah, but that means it's the Minshew show. You say that like it's a bad thing. If you get a whole day of Gardner Minshew.
No, that's a bad thing. I want to see.
I'm here for that.
I got to see Anthony Richardson. We'll be up there tomorrow. So hit us up with your Colts camp questions. Going to have some guests and everything. Have some fun. Probably have that on the Wednesday show. We have Zay Jones and Trevor Lawrence connecting on a big pass.
Yeah.
Deep ball.
Oh, Calvin Ridley's been getting a ton of hype.
Oh, Ridley's looking great. Great route runner. Mm-hmm. Jameson Williams with a rough start to the first padded practice of the summer. Dropped 2 balls against air and then went 0 for 3 during red zone one-on-ones.
Yeah, that's not great.
He did have a huge block, though.
Huge block.
Jahmyr Gibbs breaks out a big run sparked by a helmet-popping block from Jameson Williams.
Okay.
Maybe Jameson Williams is just what Julio Jones was at Bama, just a really good run-blocking receiver. Mm. That's all he is.
Seems unlikely.
Yeah, probably not. What else do we have here? C.D. Lamb on Dak Prescott. He's very aggressive, and he's looking for the deep ball now.
Yeah. C.D. Lamb is one of those guys that is at the forefront of, like, training camp video Hall of Fame people. Like, oh, that yeah. guy is that guy destroys training camp every year.
He does.
Highlight videos left, right, and center.
Destroys NFL, too.
Yeah, but like not George to the
Pickens.
Same.
George Pickens, like, I'm crazy not saying catches
he's,
always
I'm,
show
he's
up.
Not, like, I'm not saying he's Dante Moncrief, like, only, but at the, like, in terms of the 1% of the 1%, that guy must have one of the best training camp montage highlight reels of, like, any player ever.
I love it. I'm going to buy into all the hype. We're going to buy into all of it.
Okay.
All right, is that all I have?
That's your list?
We get the one-handed interception. Who had that one-handed interception that's gone viral for the Giants?
I forget the safety. Who that was.
Just to follow up your Dalton Kincaid point, Anthony cover one. See the guy that criticizes us all the time? No, it's Greg cover one. Bill's
losing track of the cover Bill's one site. People. Yeah, Jason Pinnock, right, was the guy with the one.
Ah, Pinnock, yeah. But Anthony cover one says, Dalton Kincaid's athleticism and fluidity is on display with every rep. So smooth in his movements. Even when he has to make an adjustment or extend himself, there's no wasted motion. It looks effortless.
Hmm.
That's why he went in the first round.
He's really good at the stuff that you tend to focus on, but in addition to that, has that sort of trick that I talked about in terms of manipulating coverages.
The
but
feel.
Like,
yeah.
Kyle Pitts, maybe the best receiver I can remember in terms of effortlessly catching a ball no matter where it was thrown. Like, was able to pluck it out of the sky with zero wasted motion no matter where it was. And a lot of the time it was not where it was supposed to be. Kincaid's pretty close. Like, he's not quite as good as Kyle Pitts at that, I think, but he's pretty close behind him. Like, that's absolutely a strength of his. It's just I don't think it's his biggest strength, which is a good thing.
All right. I want to run this by you to wrap it up.
Okay.
Omar Kelly. Yeah. Should I quote anything that Omar Kelly?
I mean, you can quote it. Just understand that it's probably ridiculous.
I mean, we have a long history with Omar.
Omar has still blocked me from something that happened God knows when, years ago.
Dolphins beat writer.
Very strange person.
Unique takes, we'll certainly say.
Yeah. He, I'm pretty sure, when we did that training camp tour, whenever the hell that was, when we were at Miami Dolphins camp, this is still like years ago, and I was still blocked by him. But I'm pretty sure he knows who we are.
Well, he was critical of PFF. He was one of the first, like, highly critical people of PFF.
Yes.
Trashing us all the time on
social
media.
But he's also quite critical of a lot of people. And I think generally is not held in the highest esteem when it comes to, you know, beat writers throughout the NFL. There's some very good beat writers. There's also some people that are
we've all had our misses.
Kind of terrible.
He's got the Legadoo Nene miss.
But we were at, like, Dolphins camp, and, you know, the practice had finished, and everyone's kind of down on the field, you know, getting into the, like, media scrums and the huddles and blah, blah, blah. It's difficult to tell because you're in pretty close quarters and people are sort of rubbing shoulders naturally just because everyone's jostling for the same square inch of real estate. He seemed like, you know, when you're a kid and you're sort of like, oh, I'm going to walk by this guy and, you know, tense the shoulder and just let him know who's boss, you know, alpha, like, I'm going to claim this space.
Middle school stuff.
In the corridor. Yeah, when you're 12.
Yeah.
I was pretty sure he was doing that to me. And it's like, really?
I wasn't there that day, but I'm pretty sure he wouldn't do that to me.
I don't think he would. No.
Yeah, it's messed up.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm about to quote him right here, but it's something worth
quote
watching.
Away.
Okay, so
because I can't see
really quick. So the tweet that I sent you that you're blocked to see, was it was a video of two defensive linemen doing like hand to hand combat drills.
Okay,
and Omar's like, man, 20 years of covering training camp, I've never seen this drill. I'm like, really? That's like pretty common stuff, you know. So here's what he says, Omar Kelly. Take it for what it's worth. Okay. Track record is trash. Quote on Tyreek Hill. Quote. Excuse it however you'd like, but Hill's first week made him look like he'd lost his superpowers. Hill, a 7-time Pro Bowler, blended in and not how a player on a Hall of Fame trajectory is supposed to practice. You could tell he's either slowed by a nagging injury or his focus is off because he's had too many drops. End quote.
Mm.
It's a fascinating story because there's zero players in the league like Tyreek Hill right. on the field. The speed is out of this world. He's also that guy who would like come up limping like once a game. And if he ever comes up limping, it's like, okay, is that it? Right? Like if he loses a half a step, he'll still be faster than everybody, but you're not the same player. And it's even more fascinating because the Chiefs got rid of him, right? The Chiefs took the chance to get rid of him, to take a step back before they took a step forward. They won a Super Bowl in that year without Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill also went to Miami and made that offense so much better. You got him and Jaylen Waddle on the field. If Tyreek Hill loses a step, is this whole thing over if he's not the same player for the Dolphins? So the Dolphins have a chance when he's healthy, Jaylen Waddle's healthy, and they've got this explosive offense, healthy Tua. They have a chance to make a run here, but this might be nothing. Again, consider the source. Or it could be something to keep an eye on. Tyreek Hill not looking superhuman at practice. Per one source, a source who also had never seen hand-to-hand combat drills for defensive linemen and thought Legadu Nene was a number one receiver coming out of training camp 6 or 7 years ago. So,
and apparently tries to shoulder check people.
And
blocked.
He tried to bully you on the sideline. Consider the source. But I'm just saying.
For the record, I wasn't intimidated.
I'm glad. I'm glad you still.
I'm going to put that out there.
You should. I would say tweet at him, but can't.
I can't.
Blocked.
Well, I could, but he won't see it, I don't think.
I actually hadn't seen Omar's name in like 5 years until, I don't know, recently.
You're not blocked. You just don't follow.
No, definitely don't follow him. But, you know, see what happens. All right, that's enough rambling for today. It's a great show. I just love talking ball. You guys love talking ball with us? It's good times.
If you don't, this is probably not the show for you.
It might not be. But, yeah, we appreciate everybody. I'm going to grind some more draft. Do some draft film. Some people wanted that.
I have work to do. I have things to write about.
Oh, okay. All right, we're going to go to Colts camp tomorrow. Hit us up with your questions about Colts camp. And, yeah, we'll be back on Wednesday with some Colts recap and just general NFL news. Sound good? All right, thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you Wednesday.